Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your hosts, Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
The best guests, the best insight.
Lofton with his team down by two, to the corner, Caputo! No good! And it's over! St. Louis is going dancing!
All backed by over 40 combined years of covering the biggest events in St. Louis sports.
Blues have the puck, Thomas off the wall, shoots, and it's in! They score! It's the St. Louisan, Pat Maroon! Bring out the Zamboni! Pat Maroon just put the city on his shoulders, and he sends them to the conference finals!
Now, here are Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan KFNS and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box, all new 590 The Fan. Frank and Martin here till 12 o'clock. Got a good program lined up for you today. Danny Heitert, STC Grid Report. He'll tell us how well Mizzou is doing in the area and what Illinois is doing in the area with these outstanding commitments. Lance Allen, Martin's friend from Milwaukee, talking Brewer baseball.
Yeah, I mean, Cato Kalin is the most upset Brewer fan when they're winning. We haven't checked on him now that they're losing a fair amount, but what's the Milwaukee vibe? Because soon it's Packers training camp, and typically that's when people stop paying attention up there. So but they're a big-time disappointment.
Cato Kalin, who lived in O.J. Simpson's, what was it?
He was a guest house.
Guest house,
yeah.
He grew up in Milwaukee.
And he grew up in the Milwaukee area and tweets like a madman. About the Brewers. And this is when they're 10, 15 games over 500. He's been calling for the owner and manager to be fired for years now. He's like an insane fan.
When he's really mad, the Brewers' principal owner, Mark Attanasio, he calls him Mark Pistachio.
Correct.
That's when he's really mad.
He has little nicknames for everybody.
Wow.
So even when they're good, he's mad. And I'm curious what the vibe is in Milwaukee because they are the reigning division champs. They're the ones who were, a couple of runs away from going to the World Series last year. Misery loves company, Frank.
Yep. All right, our opening monologue is brought to you by our good friends at Worldwide Technology Raceway. And Martin, you just chime in. I'll throw a couple of things at you, and we'll go with lap one to begin with. So, admit it, yesterday at this time, when the Cardinals were riding the crest of that robust three-game win streak, you kind of thought like Michael Corleone from Godfather 3?
Just when I thought I was out. They pull me back in.
Yeah, they're back. Then they do what they've done all year. Five hits and one run. If ever a game summed up the Cardinal offense, it's 29 games, Martin, with six or fewer hits. It's 24 games with five or fewer hits, and that's the third most in baseball. I've been watching the Cardinals my whole life, like everybody in this room. I can't remember a time where we've had so many futile outings with just nobody hitting.
After that seventh inning, when they stranded first and third, nobody out, didn't you say they're losing this game? It was only tied 1-1, and I don't know what the percentages at that point said they'd win or lose.
What was your confidence level in Harrison Bader? Who did have a hit that game. But
low made lower when he squared.
But this is who they are right now. You get your rotation from Ponce de Leon to Hudson, Wainwright, Michaelis, Flaherty. The first five games back from the break, that rotation gave you 35 and two-thirds innings and gave up four earned runs. Five pitchers, four earned runs. And what did you do with that? You went 3-2.
Wow. Lap two.
Cardinals had a 79% chance of winning after the
when it was tied
won.
At
when
one.
It was first and third, no out.
Oh, when it was first and
when
third.
It was first and third, no one out. They had a 79% chance of winning.
Rob Rayton said it first. If Matt Carpenter and Paul Goldschmidt don't hit, the season is over. Now, I don't think I agree with all that because Matt Carpenter likely won't hit and hasn't hit for a long time. And now he's injured. We won't see him till August anyway. I do think that if Paul Goldschmidt doesn't hit, I don't think they're a wild card team. Last night, 0-4, Andy Van Slyke in studio with us yesterday had these thoughts on Goldie.
Here's the thing about Goldschmidt. He's been a very very productive hitter, not only pulling the ball, but hitting the ball with authority the other way. That's the one thing I think that's missing that I've seen in the past from him. That
he's really pulling the ball too much.
Well, I don't. It just seems like I don't see damage to right center and right field like he has in the past. And I'm sure it's something he knows. I'm sure it's something he's trying to address. But he was a guy that used the whole field. And because of his past, he knows that for him to be good, that's going to have to happen.
Everybody has a theory on Goldschmidt. I had a scout tell me that he wonders about his bat speed. And then, of course, John Mozeliak told us last week, he's just 0-2 every at-bat. He's just behind on every count.
I remain in the group that says he'll be okay. And even Vance Leich says, I think he'll be fine. And the move was the right move. If it ends up being a bust, that's a tremendous bust. I wouldn't go there now. That'd be silly.
Yeah.
The guy was an all-star for 6 straight years. You can tell he's not somebody who is sloughing off. This is a guy whose approach is the same every day, who's got a great resume. I think he'll be fine, but maybe he won't be as good as we thought. But I wouldn't say he's going to be a bust.
Yeah, I mean, there's that's crazy. If the guy, he's going to end up with at least 25 home runs.
Maybe his bad year is still a decent year, but they need him to be great.
All right, lap 3. So as Martin touched on this, the reason you can't overreact after a really frustrating loss and that inept offense is because of this. The starting staff is just incredible. I mean, who don't you like of the 5? The guy today, Daniel Ponce de Leon, has the lowest ERA. The guy Monday, Miles Michaelis, just threw a 100-pitch shutout. The guy Sunday, Adam Wainwright, was awesome. The guy Saturday, Dakota Hudson, has been your most consistent starting pitcher all day. And then last night, Jack Flaherty was really dominating for the 2nd consecutive game, and he was so clutch in that 7th inning.
There's a strikeout. He got him. Strikeout number 7 for Jack Flaherty. Flaherty. He got him. Struck him out. And the Pirates strand a pair.
Jack was he was in control pretty much throughout. You know, he had to gut it up a little bit in the 7th. Just felt like that was an opportunity for him to continue to. He earned it. He earned a pitch that get through the 7th, and you know, he got after Newman for a big full count punch out. Keep it tied.
Yeah, and I applaud Mike Schilt for staying with him. And Martin, because of this starting staff and the mediocrity of the division, you and I will be live every night the final week of the season. It's going to go down to the wire.
I mean, if Flaherty, the last 2 starts he's given you, if Flaherty is going to be that guy, then you got a chance. You still don't, I mean, you still have to hit, but I think Flaherty, haven't you been more disappointed? Like Waka, you were hopeful, but you're not that disappointed because you didn't expect a ton.
Yeah.
I think in terms of disappointment, I think Flaherty's been right up there. And if he can be, this is the guy we thought he was going to be. Last year, Bob Nightingale said, that's your rookie of the year. He was sitting in Memphis. He is that much, I mean, he is that talented. That if Flaherty is good the rest of the way, really good, that almost has to happen. I know we focus on the hitting, but doesn't Flaherty have to be special?
Which of the starters do you have? Let's go around the corner here, around the horn, I should say. Which of the starters do you have the least amount of confidence in as we wake up on this Wednesday, July 17th?
I think Ponce might be my highest confidence. Like, he never craps the bed.
Yeah. Like, who do you have the least?
Miles Michaelis, just because of the inconsistencies this year. I think last year, you kind of have to take that last season out the way. I mean, this is who he is. It's just a lot of up and downs, and you're not quite for sure what pitcher you're going to get it start in and start out. So I think that, to me, kind of
That makes sense, unless he's pitching at home where he's gold.
True.
But I would agree. I think Michaelis is the guy that
you don't know what you're going to get.
I'm guessing every time. Like, I think I know what Hudson will give me. He'll give me 6 innings. He's probably going to hold him to 2. Maybe he'll give up 3. Flaherty for the season's been inconsistent, but I believe he has turned the corner. Michaelis, 1 start. That's what Vance Leich was making fun of us. After 1 start, we all throw the parade. He's right. We do that a lot. I think, for me, the answer is Michaelis. Like, if you had to win 1 game tomorrow, who's your first choice to pitch that game? If it's today, it might be Flaherty. But
I'll tell you what, by 4 o'clock, today we may be saying, Ponce. Can you imagine that if Ponce ends up being your game 1 starter?
But I think your 5th answer might be Michaelis. Might be.
It has to be Michaelis. He's a pitch to contact guy giving up hard contact. He's not going to get out of jams with strikeouts, and that's an issue for me right now.
But his ERA at Busch Stadium is 2.
Yeah, it's in the 2s.
I mean,
then,
maybe depending
on
what the game
is. But are we going to have a home playoff game?
It's very high on the road, and part of that is skewed because of that one dreadful start in Texas.
I'll tell you what, though. Has any pitcher been screwed more by his defense than Miles Michaelis?
But that's the problem, though. He's pitched to contact, right?
Well, you'd expect an outfielder to catch a ball. All right, left 4. So back to the offense for just a moment. I think the biggest issue now is who leads off. I think you have to go to the guy now who's been a leadoff hitter most of his career, Dexter Fowler. He does draw some walks. He's hitting reasonably well. You have no other options. It can't be Harrison Bader or Tommy Edman if he plays. Jairo Munoz doesn't draw walks. I think this is really an interesting call today. In fact, Brian, you may want to check the lineup. And with Carpenter out for a long time and you're playing Dexter all the time, why not? Just say, hey, Dexter, we're going to make a change here. You're going to be the leadoff hitter for the next 2 weeks. I know you got some power and you're hitting with extra base hits. You should be our leadoff guy. But
lineup is as follows. Tommy Edman leading off. Jose Martinez batting second. Goldschmidt batting third. Tyler O'Neill fourth. Fowler fifth. DeJong sixth. Jairo Munoz batting seventh. And then Andrew Kisner batting eighth.
So DeJong got the big move down.
Yes.
And he has,
which is understandable.
Hitting. Right. Oh, I understand that. I think Fowler, and we've seen this for a couple of years now, his psyche matters. I think he would get excited about hitting leadoff.
Yeah.
He was signed to play center field and hit leadoff. That was part of the disappointment. Some might say sulking. I think it might ignite him a little bit to say, you know what, for the next 10 days, you're my leadoff hitter. You're having a pretty decent season. We like the way you're going about it. Take off at that. Do that job you did in Chicago. And I think he would be, you shouldn't worry about guys' psyche, but don't you think, knowing a little bit about Fowler, that he'd get a, that would give him a boost?
Since it's been such a problem all year, and I don't think any player in the leadoff spot would really surprise you or I think you'd complain about, Colton Wong doesn't really remind you of a leadoff hitter, but he does make contact. I know he's only hitting 240, but to me, I think you do a massive switch up and just try a couple of things. You know, Schilt likes consistency, but the only consistency on the Cardinal team is inconsistency, especially at the top of the lineup. I think you can completely mix it up. You can go back to Fowler if, you know, your little experiment don't work out. But I think trotting out the same two people and getting the lack of success that they both have had, I think you mix it up.
Was it Bobby Valentine that did the bag where he threw all the names in the bag? And
that'd be great.
And they just drew the names out of the hat and did a lineup. I'm serious. Charlie and I have joked about that the last couple of years. And we, in fact, I think Gardner had us do it on the air. And we had, like, Molina leading off. Like, he'd probably get a kick out of that. Why not? At this point, it might be kind of fun to see Goldschmidt hitting seventh and Wong hitting cleanup.
What is Tommy Edman's on-base percentage?
And we all love Tommy Edman. We love the story, but we have to be realistic.
Oh, it's 262.
And what's Dexter Fowler's? 355? It's got to be up there.
Fowler checks in at 357.
Yeah. And, you know, he is like the former leadoff hitter for a world champion. Of course, now he had Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez sitting behind him. So, all right, left 5. I've been saying this for a few weeks, but I can't remember a time in sports media history where one sport just dominates the coverage and the conversation more than the NBA is right now. I mean, it's July freaking 17th. And every major national show has to begin with, how will Russell Westbrook and James Harden share the ball? Or do the Lakers have enough around LeBron and Anthony? Could it be possible the Clippers with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are world champions? Is Denver ready to dominate? Do the Sixers have the best starting five? Will D'Angelo mesh with Steph? I'm not complaining because it's basketball, but it just doesn't stop. I mean, we're July, and every major show, that's all they talk about is the NBA.
And I think they're legit topics, but I also think ESPN being in bed with the NBA has really changed the NBA as a topic. ESPN,
yeah, you're right,
for all of their faults and all of the drop-off and subscriptions over the last few years, they're still a monster in terms of sports media, and they are all in on the NBA. And almost every show and every ESPN.com headline is about it's been a great partnership for the NBA. I think the interest is there, and young kids playing the video games love the NBA, but I think the ESPN marriage has driven that conversation too. I mean, I think we're interested in all these storylines, but if you go to any ESPN platform, you can't ignore it year-round.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
I mean, they're all in, and they've always been all in on the NFL, but I think they've kind of, and even though they've got Monday Night Football, don't you think they've kind of given the Heisman a little bit to the NFL and said, you know what, we really like the NBA better than you? Don't you feel that that's almost been a managerial
shift? Question, yeah. And couldn't you make a case for without the iconic television anchors like Dan Patrick and Keith Urban's still there, but without the Chris Bermans in their prime, that the two most important people at ESPN are Woj and Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah. And I'm fascinated by Woj. I need to read more on his background, though, and how it started.
I mean, there's people that compete for the NFL information title, you know, who's the number one guy. There's a bunch of guys involved. But the NBA, it's secretariat. I mean, this guy's on a different island.
I still think NFL, you got Schefter. I think that's the secretariat of the NFL. I think Schefter with his 8 phones, answering phone calls while doing live hits on ESPN.
Mort was with him at one time, and Mort is a little bit older. But there are other NFL information
like Ian
guys.
Rappaport's good and Glazer's good. There's more in the conversation.
Agree, yeah.
I agree.
There's more in the pot there, yeah.
He's at the top. But the gap between top to the others
in
the NBA, I mean, name the next biggest NBA insider in terms of online info, like constantly.
Yeah.
There's nobody.
Lowe or Broussard, none of those guys touch water.
To me, Broussard is...
he went off the radar.
He had a rough month.
Yeah, he's kind of
laughable.
What
was his major mistake?
He has a few. He said the Clippers are 100% out of the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes, and he has a couple others defending that. I've died on a lot of hills on a lot of bad takes. But not in front of millions. So
there you go. Plowsy, hold on. It's 10:20 on July, whatever the date is. Admitted, I've died on the hill. A lot of bad takes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to play that when the Cardinals win the World Series.
That's fine. I love that.
Or if Mizzou wins the national championship in football.
Wouldn't love that as much.
I'll play the bowl game.
All right. Lap 6. Stream of consciousness. I have a sleeper restaurant for everybody in this room and everybody listening, and it's only about 7 minutes away from us. It's called Sapore Italian Cafe.
Is that a hint?
Attached to STL Wing Co. right there in that strip.
Little strip, yes.
We wanted to try it for...
Yeah.
Weird how Frank mentioned how close it is to the station.
It's in Kirkwood, right off Lindbergh. It's Paul Bezzetta's place. His father is Benedetto. Do you remember the name Benedetto? Benedetto's restaurant. It was around for about 40 years in St. Louis. It's most famous for the night that Mike Keenan came to town. I don't know if you were there. Were you working at the time in St. Louis?
I was not, but this is crazy because on the 5 for Frank today is the Mike Keenan hire, which was 25 years ago today.
Wow.
The great Twitter site, Blues History, always pulls out these old headlines, and they said 25 years ago today, Mike Keenan was hired.
Now, do you know the Schnucks? The 7-Eleven off Manchester Road in De Pere. There's a...
Yes.
Yeah, you know
Frank
that strip
looks, fine dining, he looks around the room. 7-Eleven, he goes, hey, Martin, do you know where that 7-Eleven is?
What was your gas station of choice that you used to buy the food from?
Quick Trip. Donuts?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, kids, we're going to breakfast. Come on. But anyway,
underrated donuts.
Benedetto's was there, and the night Keenan was hired, it was Shanahan, Quinn, Keenan, all the brass, and about 12 live trucks and 20 reporters. It was all held at Benedetto's. So Benedetto, who's the father of Paul, I saw him in the kitchen yesterday. He's in his mid-70s. He says, hey, remember when Keenan was hired? I saw you there that night. I said, yes, sir, I remember. It was a big night in St. Louis
sports. So Benedetto's was in that De Pere strip mall by the 7-Eleven?
Then they moved to Le Chateau, right across the street from Plaza Frontenac or Chateau Village, whatever that is. So,
was this a food pick?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
His cousins are Paul Mano, John Minio, and Giovanni. So, he knows his food. Really good stuff. It's one of the best places in town.
What happens when those are your cousins and you have them over for dinner or you're hosting
PB&J's?
At Christmas? And you're cooking and they're like, eh, it's okay.
Well, insiders tell me that John Minio's mom, who's about 80 years old, she provides the Sunday gravy, the red sauce for all the functions. And other restaurateurs go over to the house and just grab the red sauce.
So if you're Italian and it's a red sauce, you get to call it gravy.
That's right.
For the
Sunday
Irish,
gravy.
We're thinking gravy is brown. It goes on potatoes. If you're Italian, you say gravy, it's red.
Honey, hand me that ragu gravy, please.
I mean, when you go to Paul Mano's, if you just had their rigatoni with the Sunday gravy and the pork in it, oh, my goodness.
When did Paul Mano's become the Blues staple? Because even years ago, you get the media guide, which I miss having a media guide.
You're right. It's something you can hold in your hands.
Yeah, you got to go online and find this stuff. But we would flip through it. I remember Pete Peterson, the former sports director at Fox 2, we were sitting there one day just flipping through, and almost every player, it said, favorite restaurant, and almost every one of them said Paul Mano's. And Pete said, I wonder if they all eat for free. Because, like, every single guy.
Wow. No, I don't think they do. I just think they love the service and the food is so great, and he's outstanding. But, by the way, at this place, in the last year, Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel dined there. So,
wow.
Not bad. All right, great piece in the Post today, Martin, on Brad Beal. And I love this stat, too. Last year, he became the first Wizard to average 25-5-5 in history. And they're talking about a three-year extension at $111 million. I got to tell you something. I hope he gets paid and everything, but he's just too great a player and too good a guy to spend his whole life in that terrible franchise.
He'll be a Laker.
A Laker? Ooh, I like that.
I love the trio between Brad. I mean, I don't know how that would possibly get done. Maybe you have to wait till next offseason, but I think, you know, you look at the NBA, it's all about the trios. It's all about the tripod of talent that you have, and I think having Bradley Beal not only could shoot lights out, one of the best in the NBA, play off the dribble, and Anthony Davis and LeBron are they're all three completely different players, which I think will kind of help that unit, and you know, he's not going to be shy to score 25 a game in L.A., I would assume.
And Frank and I are old enough to remember Elvin Hayes and Bobby Dandridge and Kevin Greavy, and when the Bullets were great.
Yeah.
But the Wizards are not a marquee franchise, and as good as Bradley Beal is, it would be fun. Like, watching Tatum is more fun because he's on the Celtics. Mm-hmm. It would be great to see Beal on either a really good team or on a marquee team.
Yes.
And then when he wins the NBA trophy, Frank and I will say, one day, he was at the Maryland Heights Hooters with us, skipping class at Chaminade.
That's right.
And we said, we'll get you back to class now. And said goodbye, took a break. An hour later, he was still there eating wings.
He didn't want to leave. Brad, we're done. I'm fine.
He's like, I'll be in the NBA in a couple of years. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
All right, finally, today is going to be sweltering. It's going to be high 90s. So here's my offer to you. I really don't have the tickets. But if I were to offer you two field box, let's say 150 for today. But the qualification is you have to be in those seats for at least seven innings.
Nope. Yeah, I'd probably take it.
I would.
You say no? You say yes?
Yeah.
I think
if
I'd
I didn't have to work, I would say, yeah, sure.
But you have to be in that 97 degree heat for
and my other option is just kind of sit at home and do nothing.
God, that sounds great. So, like, the problem with that is, like, even like when it's an evening game and it's 80 and breezy, it's hard for me to stay there for four or five innings without getting up, walking around, going to get a drink. So if you're saying staying stationary in the sun,
no, I can move and get a drink, right? I'm allowed to stop at a concession stand.
Get to go to the bathroom.
But Plazzi's making two innings.
No, but Plazzi's making it sound like you can't move and get something to drink and come back. You drink a couple beers, you sweat it out.
Look, you plop me on a nice sectional. With drinks, you know, some snacks. I prefer that
to
over.
To be fair, Plazzi wouldn't go to the game if it were 65 degrees, if that were the alternative. Sit on a sectional, smoke, and eat snacks.
Well, if I'm in the green seat getting free food, maybe I'll
the green seat's changed everything. Well, you go back to the dining room, go to the buffet.
Absolutely.
Here's the option. If I offered you seats in the last row up high, would you take those over the 150? Because you'd be in the shade.
I'd take an awning over
wouldn't you,
the view.
Wouldn't you take, like, worse seats with coverage?
Oh, that's
like out of the sun, but up high.
The problem with being up high is the getting to and fro. Like, for a smoker, you know, this is, you know, very limited. You got to go down quite a bit of stairs. I mean, the elevator only takes about 10 minutes, and it's scorching hot with man sweat and smell of all kinds. So it's hard to get to that smoking section up top. So that's a tough call.
But nobody knows up high quite like Plaza.
What's very disappointing is this is like the coolest day for us till, what, Monday? It's only getting worse.
They're setting a record high for the overnight low. It's possible it'll be 81.
Wait a minute, a record high.
I forget the term.
So like 81 at like 3 o'clock in the morning?
Our low for the night will be the warmest low possibly ever. Like in the middle of the night, it'll be 81, they said, which would be the warmest low ever.
It's about a heat index of 115 today. That's pretty brutal. Like,
so, Frank, you go sit in those seats at 150. Yeah. I'll be at Plowsy's
sectional. Get a quick 18 in. Frank.
Yeah. Quick 18.
I just texted Joe Strom to find out how many will be in the stadium today. What would you guess?
Is there a giveaway? That's always the first question you got to ask.
Actual people in there, 28,500.
I'll say less if there's no.
So
really
tickets
good
sold to be what, 35-ish?
Yeah, I
pushing
think no
40,
way.
I thought that yeah, 30. Do a little but, even better than tickets sold in that regard.
So maybe 40 sold, and then actually in the building.
Got to be under 30,000.
I'd say 25-ish.
I think there's a lot of people who might go for a few innings and then go to patios or the wheelhouse or some nearby bar and watch the rest there in a nice AC unit.
To Frank's question, our good friends at Triad Bank, Jim Regna texted me the other day and said, hey, Wednesday, not sure if you're working, got tickets for the game. And I was like, ooh, tickets for the And I before I responded, he said, we're going to be in suite such and such. I said, oh, well, I might be able to swing by in that case.
Of course, the guy with the white teeth.
Yeah, and Charlie cameras. Will come in and snipe the kid's gummy bears. Just like
yeah,
that's
Charlie
where it will. Happened. That's the incident.
All right, let's take a short time out. When we come back, Danny Heichert, who knows more about football in the area than anybody, he'll give us his take on how well Mizzou is doing with these commitments.